Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, Jason and Dee of the Surely Can't Be Serious podcast, along with Jeff of the A Film By podcast, are tackling Jaws 3D from 1983. Jeff, how you doing, man? Welcome back.
I am doing great, feeling great, ready to talk Jaws 3D.
Dee, how you doing, bud?
I am so mad at you guys. I'm so mad.
Hey,
I don't like watching terrible movies, and you guys made me watch this terrible movie.
You walked out of the theater on Jaws 3D in 1983 and have not revisited it until yesterday?
A couple days ago. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it.
Oh, gosh.
First thing we need to talk about out of the gate, Dee, you and I covered Jaws in season one. We compared that to Jurassic Park, all-time classic movie. I mean, Jaws is one of the great movies of the 70s.
You might call Jaws 3D a combination of the two story ideas of Jaws and Jurassic Park.
It's true. It's true.
That is very true.
Before we go down this road, we should mention we are comparing Jaws 3D from 1983 against Beverly Hills Cop 3, released in 1994. Two of the worst number threes in a successful franchise.
Very true.
We're going to ask that question and we're going to address that head on.
But to continue your storyline, we've covered Jaws.
Yep.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
A Film By covered Jaws 2.
But I'm telling you, and I'm telling everybody at this table, that that's a shark. And I know what a shark looks like because I've seen one up close. And you better do something about this one because I don't intend to go through that hell again.
Yep. Yes, last season on our limited series, A Film at 45, where we celebrate the 45th anniversary of movies, we talked Jaws 2.
Now that one, Roy Scheider did as a way to get out of a two-movie clause in a contract that he had. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah. He famously said he would never return to the Jaws franchise after working on that one.
Mephistopheles himself could not force me to do another Jaws movie.
Yeah, you know what else he did? He went as far as signing on to do Blue Thunder intentionally so that he would be busy so that they couldn't twist his arm and make him come back for it. You know?
Have you guys seen Blue Thunder?
Yes.
Yes.
And did he make the right choice?
Yes.
Absolutely he did.
But continuing on, Jeff, you guys covered Jaws 2, what, a couple seasons ago, maybe?
Last season we did.
Last season?
Mm-hmm.
And then Dee and I, along with you and Brad, we covered Jaws the Revenge versus Superman 4 a couple of seasons ago. And we had a lot of fun doing that.
I had a blast doing that.
Yeah, that turned out to be a really good episode, I think. We've done Jaws 1, Jaws 2, Jaws 4. We cannot not do Jaws 3.
Could have.
But we're not going to. We are tackling it head on.
Where's the completionist in you, Dee? Come on, let's do this.
So when we went to Jaws 2, we had a different director than Jaws 1. Spielberg did not come back, despite the fact that that Jaws made him. I mean, it made him, right?
No doubt.
Not the Sugarland Express. It made him. And obviously, he had to continue it on. He did Close Encounters and all of that. But then they brought in another director for Jaws 2 who got fired. Am I right?
I believe the original one got fired and then Chanot Swark took over.
Now, when that happened, they had kind of discussed having Verna Fields and Joe Alves take over as directors, as co-directors, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that is correct.
And they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go with somebody who has actually directed a movie before. Mm-hmm. And then Jaws 3 came along and they said, hey, we've got Joe Dante who's willing to direct. And they said, no, let's go with the guy who's never directed a movie before. Oh, which guy is that? The guy who was the set designer for the original Jaws. The one where the shark didn't work? Yeah, we're going to have him come back on and we're going to have him direct a movie that's the third in a major franchise.
Our shark couldn't have killed Overman. Its mother did.
You talking about the damn shark's mother?
We talked about how the entire movie of Jaws 1, like the most common thing they would hear every morning was, the shark is not working, the shark is not working. And Joe Alves was the guy in charge of the shark.
We don't get that iconic line without Joe Alves. So we owe him that much, right?
That's right. Okay, so let's talk about what was originally on the slate to be Jaws 3.
This is an amazing story right here.
It might be the movie I most want to see from the 80s that we didn't get. Nice cup, Jeff. I love that cup.
You like that?
I do. Yes.
Shout out to your guys' awesome Patreon, because I'm not just a listener. I'm a subscriber, you know, and I get these cool little bonus items.
Okay. So the original idea for the follow-up to Jaws 2 was to make a spoof movie, i.e. Airplane, called Jaws 3 People Zero.
Yeah. National Lampoon style.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they asked Joe Dante, who had directed the 1978 Piranha movie as a spoof of Jaws, to be the director. Yep. And he's like, yeah, let's do this.
They had Maddie Simmons, who was the producer on Vacation movies,
Animal House,
all the National Lampoon stuff. He was going to come on as producer. Freaking John Hughes was brought on to help write the script.
Could you imagine what this could have been?
And they brought Peter Benchley back in just to have him get eaten by a shark in his pool as the opening scene.
That wow. Sounds like a movie that would be a lot of fun and one I would want to watch.
And then son of a bee, stupid Steven Spielberg comes in and says, if you guys do this, I will walk away from Universal Pictures.
I'm not sure I believe that story.
Okay.
I mean, he was okay with Piranha.
Right, because it wasn't a Universal Pictures.
Well, I mean, he was okay with them copying Jaws to do something else. I don't know. I did read that. Did you read the script?
I did not get a chance to read the
script. Did you read the script?
I did not see it.
So I read a few pages that I could. The opening scene, of course, is Peter Benchley getting eaten by the shark in his swimming pool, which is cool. I also read that there were aliens dressed as sharks chasing people in this movie.
See, and that's getting a little weird.
Yeah, that does sound a little weird. And I did read that this movie would have featured a naked Mary Kathleen Collins the entire movie.
Mary Kathleen Collins?
Mary Kathleen Collins?
I don't know who that is.
Well, you might know her stage name as Bo Derek.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm down with that.
Yeah. I was about to say, why do I care? And now I care a lot.
Is this the same year that Tarzan Ape Man came out?
Tarzan Ape Man is 81.
Oh, okay.
This is peak Bo Derek.
Yeah, this is peak Bo Derek. Not that she's ever not been peak, honestly.
She is. Yeah, melt the camera.
She's still good in Tommy Boy. I mean,
she did. But I did read that Steven Spielberg was not happy with it and threatened Universal, hey, guys, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
I also read Joe Dante that the producers, his next door neighbors, Dick Zanuck and David Brown,
the guys who had produced the original Jaws.
Yes. He thinks that they would have clashed heads with Matty Simmons eventually, Matty Simmons wanted to do a raunchy Animal House style comedy, and they wanted to be more PG area. So he didn't think it was going to work anyway.
In the comedy, they were going to bring back Richard Dreyfuss, by the way. Richard Dreyfuss was going to be in it with Bo Derek. How awesome would that
be? That would have been amazing.
That would have been a hit.
This was no boating accident.
I got something that might blow your mind.
Okay, let's have it.
There's a little bit more to the story here.
Okay, what you got?
So when the studio balked at the idea of doing the comedy, you know, basically like lampooning themselves, this is where Richard Matheson teams up with Guerdon Trueblood, and we get the alternate Jaws 3 script, which is all about the shark swimming into a saltwater river and gets trapped in a man-made lake. Apparently, they offered this to Spielberg. He turns down Jaws 2 because he's chasing aliens with Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. This time, he has no excuse, and he just flat out says no. I got a quote here from him. He says, I would have absolutely jumped at the chance to own the sequel because I knew that when I was walking away from the sequel, I was walking away from a huge piece of my life that I had helped to create. But it wasn't a hard decision to walk away from it. I just could not imagine going back out on the ocean and sitting in a boat for 9 months.
That's a good quote.
Yeah. So he passes on it. The studio looks at Matheson and says, hey, let's skip the man-made lake. How about SeaWorld? We like the shark being trapped, but let's take it to SeaWorld. And he's okay. And they said, well, can we throw the Brody children in there? And he's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to have the Brody children. Okay. And then, well, hey, can we have the electrocuted shark from Jaws 2 still out there? He says, what? No, okay, I'm out. Yeah, no. I'm out at this point. Yeah, at that point, he had walked away. As you guys both already know, this goes through plenty of rewrites. But
yeah,
they kept the SeaWorld, they kept the Brody children, and 86, the electrocuted shark.
Well, they had, I mean, the production company on this was not actually Universal. Universal was kind of calling some shots, but it had been purchased by Alan Landsberg Productions. And does Alan Landsberg ring a bell for you guys?
No.
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 Well, okay. That's understandable. Okay. I mean, The man was involved in producing over 50 movies of the week.
Movies of the week. I love those things.
Responsible for one of the first reality TV shows. Do you guys remember That's Incredible? Early 80s.
I love That's Incredible.
I love That's Incredible.
So that's the guy that took over the Jaws franchise.
Well, where's Fran Tarkenton and Kathy Lee Crosby?
If we'd have had Fran Tarkenton and Kathy Lee Crosby in the parts of Mike Brody and whatever the best...
Dr. K!
Oh my God.
That would have been a winner.
Fantastic.
Hey, you know, we talked about why they did this initially. The reason why they did even Jaws the Revenge is because the TV airings of Jaws and Jaws 2 did so well. They're like, let's make more, you know, let's make some more of these because they're doing great. People love them.
As it turns out, they were actually right. This was the 15th highest grossing movie of 1983, a year that had a lot of really dadgum good movies.
Yeah.
15th. It made $87 million.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. They were right. This steaming pile of...
Wait a minute. This is not a steaming pile just yet.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Hey, did they get your money in 1983?
Well, not my money, but my dad's money.
It got my money.
He may... I don't know if he asked for it on the way out or not. I think he was probably so pissed he just wanted to get in the car and go home. I mean, I can remember this happening. I remember where we sat. I remember that we were midway, but we didn't go to the middle. Like, we're midway down as far as the rows go, but we didn't go to the middle of the seat. My dad's 6'4", long legs. Those days, you didn't have nice, comfy theater seats. You had crappy folding theater seats, right?
Right, right.
So we sat in the aisle. I'm second seat over. He's in the aisle. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm just watching because at 7 years old, any movie is good, right?
Right.
Any movie is good.
I mean, the experience.
You're just happy to be around
and people are talking and occasionally, you know, and I've got 3D glasses on. This is the first 3D movie I've ever seen in my life. Right. And like, I'm like, oh, this is not as cool as I thought it would be, but it's still interesting, right? You know, these things are floating and it looks like they're in a different plane of, yeah, okay, great. And then all of a sudden it's, come on. And I'm like, what? He's like, come on, we're leaving. I'm like, but the movies, he's like, I'm not watching the rest of this. In my head, I'm just thinking, I didn't know this was allowed. I didn't know you were permitted to just get up and leave when the movie wasn't over yet. And so from that point on, I have always wondered, hey, how did this movie turn out? Was it any good? Was it wrong for my dad to have taken me out of this? And I've come to the answer. The answer is, it was not wrong. He saved me. And you sons of made me drink the sour milk again.
Oh, what are you talking about? Let me paint an alternate picture for you, okay? Imagine August of 1983. A young Jason is 10 years old, got the 3D glasses on, ready to see some shark munch on some people. And it's right before school starts, and it's one of those sort of evening matinees. I'm with Patreon member Chris Alexander, his dad, his brother. We're just all enjoying a summer movie. We're going to get some ice cream afterwards. It's a great day in the summer of 1983 for young me. I loved it. I had a blast. Now, is it great? No. Is it fun? Yes. I'm going with fun. Jeff, where are you?
I'll tell you, I remember my first time watching this. It was at my aunt's house. She was babysitting me. And I remember maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes into it, I was like, this sucks. And I spent the rest of that night playing with my superpowers figures. I had a great time, but just not with this movie. Now, watching it as an adult, you know, like the last time we talked sharks, I told you guys, this one's a dumpster fire. Still is, but the fire's just not raging. My last rewatch, I kind of have come around. I'm a little softer on it now. And I think that has to do with Halloween 3 Season of the Witch. I know that's a curveball, but when Halloween 3 Season of the Witch comes out, it doesn't have Michael Myers. It's not a great movie. And everyone trashes it, right?
Sure.
20, 30 years later, it's a cult classic. And we appreciate it for being the non-canon Halloween film.
Right.
Jaws 3 is the non-canon Jaws film. When Jaws Revenge came out, their press release said, this is the true number 3. So looking back, when you look at this as more of a what if, because it's not the same Birdie Children, it's not the same setting, I can kind of appreciate it more as just a fun shark attack movie and not necessarily a Jaws film.
This is the never say never again of Jaws.
Good point. It absolutely is. Never say never much better than Jaws 3D, but, you know, I've got a couple things I can talk. I can say there's some good things about this film, but I can say plenty that isn't good about this film. So,
okay. Before we get into what works and what doesn't, I want to mention that 1983 was like the year of the three.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. We had Jaws 3. We had Superman 3. We had Star Wars 3, otherwise known as Return of the Jedi. We had Amityville 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Halloween 3, right? That was 1983, was it not?
I'm not sure about that one, but I can tell you Friday the 13th 3. I think that one might be 83.
I looked, that was 82.
Was it 82? Okay.
But still, right in that area, we have the resurgence of the 3D movie.
Oh, yeah. It's in full effect.
So I was dazzled as a 10-year-old with my 3D glasses on, with the red and the blue, you know, the old school, which is part of the reason why when anytime it was on HBO after this, it looked terrible. The picture quality was awful.
The 2D rendering on this film, and granted, usually a 3D film on regular television doesn't look, it's not going to look great, but this one is spectacularly bad.
Yeah. All right. We ready to talk about what works and what doesn't?
Sure.
I would love to know what D thinks works in this movie. Honestly.
The white sharks are killers. I know them, for God's sakes. My father, my brother, myself. They're murderers.
I think I've got three things.
Okay.
Number one, I really enjoyed the Ocean Pacific and Panama Jack t-shirts that people were wearing in the park.
Yes.
I thought that was great.
That is great.
I want those shirts back. I'm like, man, can I just find them? I'm going to go back. I spent $6.99 to buy the Blu-ray on this thing. And if I have to find value in it, it's going to be that I'm going to go back, take a screenshot of those things and see if I can't find it on eBay somewhere. Now, so that's
wait a minute. If you get an OP t-shirt out of this deal,
yeah,
you can call it a win.
That's the only win.
I want an OP t-shirt.
All right. I'll try to
get OP t-shirts all around. And if we could, add some surf style jackets.
It's going to be vintage 1983 OP t-shirt.
Yeah,
it
of course.
Be the new like Walmart.
No.
Cool. Light
no reprints.
With the surf stuff. Yes. Now, that's number one. Number two, they didn't show the shark right off the bat like they did in Jaws the Revenge.
Yes.
That is the best story idea of this otherwise horrible mash of stuff, is they said, let's try to hide the shark like we did in part one because it didn't work. And then third thing, Leah Thompson in a bikini. That's all. That's all I've got. I've got nothing else positive to say about this movie.
Well, let's expound on that just a little bit, okay?
Sure.
Because the shark, it's hidden. And actually, you get a switcheroo kind of in the middle. You get a plot twist, if you will. The mother is inside the park.
Overman was killed inside the park. The baby was caught inside the park. Its mother is inside the park.
Yes.
But they also do almost all of their diving at night, which I think adds tension and scared the crap out of me as a 10-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they do diving-wise happens in the middle of the night for some reason. And the shark stayed in the water, unlike Jaws of Revenge, which we complained about during the Jaws of Revenge thing, right?
And it didn't make any noises. It did not roar.
It did have one kind of roar.
It growls.
It growled, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I might have been nodding off at that one.
And then you do have the shark POV, right? So you're looking up at the water skiers. Which I think that's always good.
Yeah, love that. Absolutely. Jeff,
what do you got for us as far as what worked?
I got a couple things that works for me. The concept of the SeaWorld being attacked by a baby and mother shark, I think is fantastic. It was time to get out of Amity. If John McClane's going to fight terrorists for a third time, get him out of the airport, get him in a new setting. Jaws does this. And I think it works. Moving it to Orlando was a good move. The reveal of Shelby's corpse, I think, was awesome. Probably the goriest part of the whole movie, that, you know, and it's a great jump scare, kind of a callback to Ben Gardner.
Are you talking about where the corpse floats up in the water? Or are you talking about where they pull the sheet back and he looks at the face? Which one of those reveals?
I'm going Underwater Kingdom, when he just kind of floats into that little girl's perspective and she freaks out and somebody smashes
her face against the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, there he is. Make out with him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you on it. I thought that was terrible.
What?
Okay.
In the original, you've got a completely dark black hole, and then just, you know, it just reveals itself. Whereas this one, you're looking at a bright, sunny blue tropical fish, and this guy floats up.
I'm not saying it's better, I'm just saying it's a throwback. It's a kind of a callback to Ben Gardner. Like I could see what they're doing with that. I'm not saying it's better. I'm just saying I appreciated.
Whenever that guy gets attacked in the first place and the goggles float down and land on the coral, that's a throwback to Lawrence of Arabia, but that doesn't make it good.
Okay. All right. Well, let me try a couple other things I thought were work for the movie.
Keep going, Jeff. I'll hold him off.
Look. Louis Gossett Jr. as Calvin Burchard. Come on. He is hot off his Academy Award win for An Officer and a Gentleman. He's kind of our Mayor Vaughn substitute. He's just having a good time. I love Louis Gossett Jr. I know we recently, sadly, we lost him recently here. But
yeah, just the other day.
Yeah.
Anytime I get a chance to talk Louis Gossett Jr., and I know we've talked about him several times on a film by, I was just happy to talk Jaws 3 with you guys because I was like, here's another option to talk Lou Gossett. I thought he was great.
I saw something that had a drinking game rules for this movie. And one of the take a drink moments was every time that Louis Gossett Jr. said,
Here.
And then, wait a minute, we're having dinner here.
Yeah.
I called Jeff today and I'm like, whose dialect was better, Louis Gossett Jr. in Jaws 3 or Jake in Jaws 4?
Come on, you overgrown goldfish. Come to Uncle Jake.
Oh, Louis Gossett Jr.
Oh, it's Gossett Jr. I got one more thing that I thought worked pretty well for this film.
Okay, what you got?
Fitzroy's death. This is a chance, like we've seen the shark crunch into somebody time and time again for the first couple of movies. And when we go inside, we get that POV inside the shark's mouth and we're watching him get crushed and crunched and he's gurgling and there's blood. I really like that. I thought that was a cool shot that the director gave us on this one.
I agree.
Something we hadn't seen before.
I have forgotten. I had forgotten that. That was decently done. I agree with you.
Can I say one more thing about Lou Gossett Jr.?
Yeah.
I think he's a shrewd businessman in 1983.
Why don't we blow it up?
Listen, nephew. It's a $2.5 million turbine that's not going to go up in smoke because of some damn fish. Now shut the pumps down.
I mean, we got to remember, he spends $34 million on this epic underwater undersea kingdom that it takes 4 years to build. $34 million in 1983. I know that's a lot of money, but for what he builds, man, he is cutting corners. He is making some great deals. I don't know what was involved.
That's worth $1 billion now.
Cutting corners so that it cannot withstand a bump from a shark.
Well, you got Dennis Quaid on call. He got down there and got a patch in. So
get down there and weld in the middle of the night and fix that thing.
Yeah. That's all I got for what worked for me though.
Hey, Jeff, have you seen The Meg?
Yes, I've seen both of them.
Okay. Is The Meg is it blatantly copying the ideas of Jaws 3 and doing it better?
Yes.
I mean, you've still got the shark banging into the underwater glass capsule and breaking it.
Yep.
And you've got the surprise twist of there's two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled that off way better in The Meg, even though The Meg is not a particularly great movie. It's still, they pulled that part off very well.
Yeah. I've talked about The Meg before. Both of them, I think, are just fun popcorn movies. Just, it's a fun summer popcorn movie. I don't want a lot. Just show me some cool shark attacks and let me see Jason Statham do some cool stuff. That's it. But they did it way better than Jaws 3 ever could.
Okay, you want me to hit you with what I think works?
Go ahead. What works for you, Jason?
Since I'm the biggest fan of this movie, I guess I'll wait for the end to tell you what I think works on this. I think the premise of capturing a great white shark and placing it in an amusement park, it's a great hook. Now, the execution is not perfect. They don't necessarily stick the landing. But when you tell me that this is what Jaws 3 is going to be about, there's a baby great white capture inside SeaWorld. And mama gets mad. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm on board with that. I'm ready to go.
The pilot in the movie Alive didn't stick the landing. This was a disaster.
I like that there's a good commentary between Calvin and Kay about this is an opportunity that no one's ever had, you know, a great white in captivity. Think of the dollars as opposed to Fitzroy's who just wants to kill it live on television. And think about it. We don't have great rights in captivity. There's a reason for that. And so I like that they explored it, honestly.
Okay. I want to talk about the cast for a second.
Okay.
I think that they nailed a young kind of unknown cast early in the 80s. You have a young, handsome, heroic Dennis Quaid, who's playing Mike Brody.
Hey, is this my beeper or your beeper?
I don't know. I'll use this beeper.
Use that beeper.
Mm-hmm. Talk to you later.
All right, I'll have my beeper beep your beeper.
I'll have my beeper beep your beeper back.
And fueled by cocaine.
And totally fueled by cocaine, right?
Yeah.
I believe his quote was, "There was not a frame of this picture that I was not high."
I believe it.
But this is right before he gets the right stuff and then takes off. I mean, he's in inner space and he's Doc Holliday and all these other, I mean, he goes on to a star-spangled career after Jaws 3. You have Bess Armstrong, who I told D, she was a babe for about 15 minutes and they captured that moment in time.
She was not a babe.
She was a cutie pie.
She was not a cutie pie.
She was a cutie pie for about 15 minutes.
There's literally nothing sexually appealing about her at all. She's not ugly, but like she looks like she should be in a high collar Little House on the Prairie style dress. Her haircut makes you think that Mike Brody had a thing for his mom because she looks like a younger version of Lorraine.
No.
Yes.
No.
One from Jaws, from the first Jaws. Yes.
My take would be that she's hot in the way that Adrian, she's potentially hot. Yeah. Like think like Adrian and Rocky.
Adrian from Rocky.
Yeah. There's potential there.
They share the same amount of hotness. I'll go with you on that. That being zero. No,
she's a cutie pie.
There's potential there.
And what is the deal with her kissing her boyfriend's brother open mouth? I mean, number one, her kisses are very awkward. They're the every kiss that she delivers is awkward. But the fact that she also kisses her not brother-in-law, I don't even know what you call him, but what? And they do a little sandwich of Dr. K.
Hey, here's my brother. Let's make out.
I just, because I even watching this recently, I didn't really pick up on the fact that did she know him from a prior visit? Because he's from Amity, but he's coming in from Colorado.
He went to Colorado because of the fear of sharks. Because of the fear,
yeah. He had an issue with the.
You can add that to a very, very long list of unanswered questions as far as characters and what happened with them in this story.
I want to know if when you and your dad walked out of the theater, when you got up, that there's a loudspeaker voice that was like, follow your guides to your nearest convenient exit.
No, there was somebody running around in absolute panic, trying to warn an entire park full of people that this was the worst movie ever. He wrecked a golf cart. He jumped into the water with his shoes on. He had Coke streaming out of his nose. Good thing he didn't panic. Or use the intercom. What?
He used what he had. He had a megaphone. That was it. And a microphone.
Yeah.
Question that we can't answer while we're talking about little brother, Sean. He shows up 12 months early for the Footloose casting call to play Willard. And I just can't figure that out. I understand if you're going to go to school out of state, but that doesn't mean you become that state. He shows up in his cowboy hat and his cowboy boots and his yawls and
the heels of Urban Cowboy. There were a lot of folks doing that back in the
80s. He's an Amity, New York cowboy.
There's another sequel that we missed out on.
Hey, by the way, I'll just add to the Leah Thompson discussion. When she puts his cowboy hat on and says, "You don't swim, not even with friends." That works.
Well, I'm doing anything. Yeah.
So Leah Thompson, I didn't realize this is her feature film debut. Although that's not what she told the casting director whenever she was auditioning.
Okay.
She said she had been in a few other movies, like fluffed her experience. And by fluffed, I mean lied about it. And I mean, it worked out. She got this part. And then just 2 years later, she's Back to the Future.
Lorraine McFly.
Yeah.
Lorraine. That's a great gamble. I mean, think about it. This is 83. It's not like you could just check her out on Google. I mean, if you're not going to like the Dewey Desk, you know, the filing system at the library or calling around town, like, good for her.
And she had to have done, I mean, All the Right Moves was right around this time too.
Right after. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this must have been the very next movie. She probably was able to get that movie by saying, "Hey, I've just been in the Jaws sequel. A pretty major part in the Jaws sequel."
You ever heard of Jaws? I'm in that movie.
Yeah. Don't you want me for this movie before anybody knew how bad it was? Yeah.
By the way, Jennifer Jason Leigh almost got the part of Kelly Bataski.
That would have been good.
That would have been more frustrating, though, because with Jennifer Jason Leigh, I always expect to see her breasts. And this was a deliberately PG movie where they left all of the breast takes out.
Mm-hmm. Breasts in 3D.
Midnight swims with a shark.
That's it.
We missed out on this.
Okay. Anything else good to add to the list here?
No.
Okay. Hey, Richard Matheson and Carl Gottlieb wrote the script.
Sort of.
I won't hold that against them.
Before they got, it got hacked to pieces, but.
Richard Matheson wrote a script with Michael Caine for this movie.
What?
Yeah, I thought I'd throw you off with that one. It was a guy named Michael Caine, K-A-N-E.
Yes, not.
But ironic.
Not Hoagie.
Yeah, not Hoagie. Ironic what happened with Jaws of Revenge. Different Michael Caine.
I knew a one-armed man who took him 2 minutes to do the one-minute waltz.
Come on, Ellen. Give it a kick in the ass.
Okay, well, let's talk about what doesn't work.
Everything.
You tell Shelby Overman for me. He can take a flying leap at a rolling donut on a gravel driveway, you hear?
I got a couple things.
Jeff, why don't you start us off?
All right, let's talk about what doesn't work. We've already touched on this a little bit, but using the Brody characters. We know that this isn't canon, and this movie would have been so much better as just a shark thriller if this just could have happened to some other people at SeaWorld Orlando. We did not need to jam the Brody lineage down our throats on this one. Or, so that doesn't work.
If you're going to do it, acknowledge it more than something happened to him when he was a kid and he's scared of the water. I mean,
yeah.
If this is Sean and Mike Brody, this is the third time they've gone through something like this. Acknowledge that. Don't act like it's they've never had something to deal with something like this before. Bring up the dad having to kill two great whites in their past and having witnessed people being massacred. Nothing.
Yeah.
None of that. Why wouldn't you go into that?
Yeah. At this point, Michael has had two very intense encounters with a shark. You know, he gets the scare in the bay, you know, where they have to take him to the hospital in Jaws. Obviously, him and his buddies all get their smaller boats get destroyed at the end of Jaws 2. So he's pretty happy-go-lucky about it, where Sean's just dealing with some severe PTSD over, I don't know, seeing his brother almost get eaten. It doesn't work. Just get rid of the Brody characters. That's all you got to do. Dennis Quaid could have been anybody else but Mike Brody. That's one problem. Another big problem, this shark is boring. And what I mean by that is the mouth moves little, if at all. We just get that same static, very gummy looking shot. Doesn't really move its mouth. And the climactic break through the glass scene, it's basically, it looks like a cardboard cutout of a shark that's just slowly inching along. It's terrible. And I get it. We know it's 3D effects rendering to 2D, but that doesn't excuse the fact that even in 3D, it probably did not look fantastic. This shark, it's a boring shark. As far as I'm concerned.
I'm going to jump on everything that you say here and take it up a notch. So I watched the making of Jaws 3, which, by the way, for the first, it's a 45-minute thing. For the first 20 minutes, all they do is like live shots of real sharks and scenes from Jaws 1 and Jaws 2. That's how little faith they had in their own movie. But when they did start talking about Jaws 3, they talked about how precise they were about making sure that this robotic shark's mouth operated like a real great white's mouth, where the teeth protrude from the mouth. Good. Why didn't we get to see any of that? Like, we didn't see that one single time.
Not once.
And to add on to the phenomenally terrible slow motion attack of the where they literally have the characters scream in slow motion as the shark moves in what appears to be slow motion. This is the same shark that we saw just a bit ago keeping up with the skiers on a speedboat. Like, this is the fastest great white in history. And now when it's about to attack, it has to ram the window that is made with glass that is supposed to withstand the pressure of being underwater. It's moving at the speed of paint.
Yeah. You know, jump on what you guys are saying, one of the things that I don't think works is literally we go from we think there's a shark somewhere in the vicinity to the shark hits the bumper cars, it attacks the skiers, it attacks the tube. It's like terrorizing this SeaWorld park.
For my positive list, because I was really trying to find positives, I was going to mention that they used live shark footage in this. I thought that was a great part of part one. The Valerie Taylor, whatever her husband's name is, those guys had filmed stuff that they used live real sharks, and that's great. They use it in this, but for some reason they decided to speed it up or slow it down in some kind of nonsensical way, which ruined the positive aspect of using the live shark footage in the first place.
I got one more thing.
Go for it.
I can go either way on a freeze frame ending. However, this is the most horrible version of a freeze frame ending ever, because we get this great, happy, mega terrific ending where where you got Mike and Kay and the dolphins, Cindy and Sandy, all waving at us with a big smile. Like, the dolphins are even with their fins are waving. And I just, it's so cringeworthy. I mean, I'm just like.
And you get the shout. All right.
Yeah. Thank you for the Mentos fresh maker ending to this movie, because it's just, it's terrible.
Okay. We've already talked about what, for me, what doesn't work. I think the picture quality is terrible until 2012. The effects are awful. The shark on a railroad system, the cardboard shark cutout, mm-hmm. the money shot of the movie. You can't spend five extra bucks to make his tail wag, you know, or
something,
make him wiggle a little bit. The submarine going across where they're like, oh yeah, we see you. Looks like, you know, a Clash of the Titans effect or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Very animated.
There's a lot of pointing and motioning and grunting by the actors under the water. There's a whole lot of and then the dolphins versus the shark scene is cringeworthy. It's ridiculous.
On this week's episode of Flipper, Flipper encounters not one, but two great white sharks.
I've got one more thing. I told D, the end of the movie really worked for me as a kid. You've got a dead guy hanging out in the shark's mouth.
Yeah.
With a grenade in his hand.
With a grenade. Yeah.
Right. I can't get out of my car without dropping my phone, but the dead man is holding the grenade firmly in his hand. Okay. With the dead man still in the shark's mouth, the shark goes and eats somebody in the control room.
Nephew.
The nephew drags him out, presumably eats him. Doesn't matter. He works his way around the grenade, but just the fact that the arm grenade is still holding it securely long enough for them to pull the pin and, you know, blow the floating 3D jaws at us.
Can we just quickly mention the world's most difficult carnival game? Because Dennis Quaid in scuba gear fashions some kind of hook in front of the great white shark. And then as Kay is jabbing at him, we're going to believe that he sticks this thing in the shark's mouth, catches the pin on the grenade, and pulls it.
If I get my keys locked in my car, I'm calling Dennis Quaid.
Call Dennis Quaid, right?
Now, don't forget the world's greatest drinking game, too. It's all about balance.
So this is a real game. Like, I thought that this had to become something completely made up. It didn't
appear
to be real. This is a real game. I literally texted you guys during this part. I'm like, what is this phony baloney balance game that they're doing in the bar? It's called Standoff. And apparently you have to plant your feet, and the objective is to make the other guy fall down. I don't know if in real life that it looks as ridiculous as it did in this movie, but it is a real game. I think it's more like something that kids play than like grown-ups play, but
we used to play it at recess.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
There you go.
I'm bringing this back to all the pubs I go to. You
know. Okay. And I do want to bring up one other thing that I think worked. And I just want to double down on what you said, Jeff, when Fitzroy is inside the shark's mouth, for me, that was nightmare fuel as a 10-year-old.
Oh, God. Yeah. So
it's one thing to get chomped and like chewed up by a shark, but to be like swallowed or like stuck inside the shark and you can't get out. That scared me a lot as a kid. So,
yeah, this is, you know, Kay lets us know this is a 35-foot mother shark. So very easily you can, you know, if you're going to swallow the guy from Manimal, this is no big task for the shark. I don't think that was a scary scene, though. Maybe probably the scariest scene.
Yeah.
Is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
Okay.
Hit us with what doesn't work.
So this is a story that actually had potential, right? You guys have pointed out that, hey, this idea that sharks invade and when I told my son about it, I was like, they're in this like kind of park, aquatic park. It's kind of like SeaWorld. And then I turned it on. I'm like, holy shit, it is SeaWorld. How did they approve this? I mean, they're all over this. What?
Commercial for SeaWorld.
No, it's not.
Take your family to SeaWorld.
I was going to say, this is the worst thing for SeaWorld until Blackfish, my friend. This is terrible. But anyway, the idea that there's an invasion, that's a good idea, but they don't use any of the opportunities that come along with that idea. And when they do a terrible job of it. Then who's the bad guy in this? Are we going to say Louis Gossett Jr.? I mean, he's the most watered down version of the mayor from the. It's not him. And then I thought he didn't do anything wrong. Viceroy. Like I thought it was going to be the guy from Animal. I thought he was going to be,
yeah,
because there's this opportunity of, okay, he's hitting on Dr. K. And so there's going to be this animosity. And then maybe he's the guy that sacrificed. No, none of that. That total. He's not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He's just a guy who wants to kill the shark with a grenade. And that's he's a plot point.
Yeah.
He's not a character. Mm-hmm. He's a plot point, but he's a character that could have been. And he wasn't. And then there's no tension between Dennis Quaid and Bess. What's her name?
Armstrong.
There's no love tension between them, but there was a total opportunity. He's got this job. I guess they need aquatic engineers in Venezuela. So he's got this big job offer. And maybe there's some tension with her trying to figure out, oh, do I stay here with Shamu or do I go with my boyfriend? And now it's all just kind of, yeah, okay, I'll go with you. Well, I'll just quit and I'll just go with you. Then you have the entire movie take place in one place. It's all at SeaWorld. Like they don't leave SeaWorld. We don't go to their house. We don't do none of that. They don't go down to the Bahamas. And yet I was absolutely confused as to how this park was made up. Like I was like, I don't understand where things are. When Viceroy gets eaten and his guy who's been this tough as nails guy.
Fitzroy.
That's what I said, Fitzroy. It's
Viceroy.
Whatever.
Who cares?
The Star Wars listeners will appreciate that.
when the Robert Shaw character that is his best buddy thinks that he might be, he starts bawling like a baby.
That guy.
And he goes in some random tunnel and I'm like, why is he going in this tunnel? This is the first time we've seen this tunnel and he's running down screaming at the top of the water as though he has no experience how sound and water work together. And he's bawling like a baby. I mean, it's just, there were a lot of opportunities for good things to happen that they all let die. It seems to me they took an effort to make this the worst movie that they could.
I do agree with you that if Fitzroy had been a bad guy or doing something slimy behind the scenes, that would have been a very satisfying death to see him get crushed to death in the shark's mouth.
Do we even know what he was doing? Like, why was he's there?
He's taking pictures.
Yeah, he's there. Well, he's an adventurer, but I don't. Yeah, he's there to just photograph the water skiers and some dolphins and some other stuff.
He was here.
Here's this. You know, watching this again, you know, since Dee brought the guy up, his assistant who is really attached to Viceroy Fitzroy, he gave off a real Smithers vibe this time watching it. You know, like from The Simpsons.
Yeah,
he is too attached to this guy.
Yeah,
this is the guy that punched out the guy who was resistant to getting out of the water.
He did.
That was awesome.
I'm here to save you. Let me hit you in the face.
That guy's holding a beer and he's in 2 feet of water. He's gonna be okay. Actually, I'll tell you one thing that worked that we didn't mention. As a kid, when Leah Thompson gets knocked off the bumper boat and the shark like gouges her thigh and they pull her out of the water and they lay her on the ground, I was like, "Whoa, my gosh, look at her leg."
I was like, "Whoa, my gosh, look at her nipples." Visible through
the shirt. Sorry. I'm going to redirect that. Yeah, that works.
Okay.
That works, but what doesn't work?
Okay.
What the heck happened to him? Sean jumps in the ambulance with her and they are never to be seen again.
No. Sean gets eaten at the beginning of Jaws the Revenge.
Well, that's true. You know, the Willard stand-in, who is Dennis Quaid's younger brother, he jumps into the ambulance. But again, what happened to her?
Yeah.
Literally, that's the most interesting romantic storyline of the movie, and they just cut to credits without ever telling us. No resolution. We have no resolution. Yeah. I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking to myself that this was supposed to be a National Lampoon's story initially. I really feel like they still left some bits in there. There are some moments where they're peeking around the corner, and when Leah Thompson and Sean Brody are playing hide and seek in the maybe 2 foot tall flag maze, I was like, is this Benny Hill? What is this? They're prancing around and I'm expecting a saxophone to start going.
when we're introduced to her character, she's clearly the Marion Ravenwood of SeaWorld Orlando. So maybe they had quite a few drinks at the point where they're playing hide and seek in that small netting. I don't know, but I'm here for it, because you know I'll follow her down to the beach anytime.
All right. So my question to you guys is, number one, if you're in charge of the Jaws franchise at Universal, what can we do to save this franchise? Is it savable? Can we save it?
Daddy, look at the fish.
Look! Holy s***.
I have a 3-point plan, but I thought I'd let D take
no
a step this first.
Grenades.
As many things as have happened in the last 40 years since this movie came out, I don't think this is you can do a sequel and do this franchise justice. I don't think that you can. I mean, this goes back to the film by questions at the end, you know, do you do sequel, prequel, or reboot? To me, this is 100% a reboot. This deserves the character development that we got in the first Jaws, but let's do a different type of storyline, same type of shark, but, and maybe, you know, I don't know how you do it. I don't know if it's a pass the torch kind of thing, like we've talked about with Indiana Jones, you know, Harrison Ford passing the torch to a Chris Pratt type of guy. I don't know how that all plays out, but I don't think you try to go back and revisit the story where you've got a non-canon 3 that's terrible and a canon 4, which is only slightly less terrible. We got a text today. This is a text from Deaf Dave that we got today that said, I feel like Jason and Jeff need to explore this movie, and it was Amityville in space, right?
Yes.
And oh, so cool. I looked at the IMDb for Amityville in space, and apparently there's no trademark protection on Amityville because there's about 100 movies that are Amityville something. But in addition to that, with the what you should watch if you like this terrible movie, were a bunch of like Sharknado, Amity Shark, all of these other, you know, Shark in the Haunted House things. And I think the fear of the shark is something that you got to get rid of, because that really wasn't the driving force behind Jaws. It wasn't the driving force behind Jaws 2. What it was a man versus nature fight. And a character, the Roy Scheider character, Chief Brody character, that hates the position that he's in, but has a family to support and a town to fight, and he's torn and doesn't know what to do. That's the interesting part about this. And then the three men on the boat going after the monster. That's it.
All right, Jeff.
If I'm walking into Universal, I've got a 3-point plan to revive the franchise, because it is criminal that this franchise has been lying dormant since 1987, in my opinion. It's a moneymaker. We know that. So first off, let's focus on new characters each time you do a film. If Jaws is our Star Wars title, then we can have Jaws, the revenge, you know, like we had the revenge. Let's have Jaws, Great White Terror, whatever, you know, change up the film and the location. And more importantly, the characters. Let's see some different areas. Let's see different people. Leading to my second point, let's change up the shark. It doesn't have to be a great white every time. The last time we talked about, when we talked about Jaws of Revenge, D made a great point. Why can't we have a bull shark? You know, we know Hooper has talked about tiger sharks and a threat, you know, all these incredible sharks are out there that are deadly. And we're just stuck on the great white because of its size. But, you know, do a whale shark, do anything. Just change it.
Whale
up.
Shark.
Because
the attack of the whale shark.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean, think about it. If the title is Jaws, all these things have teeth to sink into us. Let's see
except
some different.
Except the whale shark.
Not whale shark.
Except the whale shark. But let's see some different sharks in the water that are terrorizing us. And that leads me to my third point in this reboot, this relaunch, if you will. Matt Hooper is the character that ties all the movies together. We know from Jaws that he has been all over the place. He's set to go out on the Aurora for, you know, 12 months at sea. Let him be kind of our Nick Fury of the Jaws franchise. And
oh,
I think
I like that.
and just call him Hooper. So you if he's Hooper, maybe he's Matt Hooper's son. Maybe he's not. Maybe, we don't know. He's a Hooper.
I think you bring back Dreyfus, and Hooper has become Quint in his character. Like, he's become the old angry man who's tough as nails.
I would love that. But, you know, famously, he's always said he would never do Jaws again without Spielberg. And unless we can get Spielberg to kick off this new relaunch, I think we're without him. But that's my take. That's how you fix this franchise.
Love it. I love it.
What do you got?
Well, that's where I was going to go. I wanted to bring Hooper back as the crusty old seaman. Anyway,
I'm going to pretend like that was unintentional.
I want to bring Hooper back and relaunch the franchise with Hooper. I think that would be amazing to, first of all, to revisit that character and then thrust him in there. He's almost 80 years old, but he's the expert. And we got to draw this guy out of retirement, throw him on a boat. We've got a shark eating kids, whatever. And Hooper has to come out of retirement. That's what I would do. And I think people would go see that.
So if I'm hearing you right, your fix to the franchise is to thrust the semen back into the water. Okay, I'm with you. Let's do this.
Is now the time we mention the conversation that we had?
I think earlier. We should. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I hadn't yet watched the movie. I still haven't watched Beverly Hills Cop 3, by the way. But I just got to tell you, this movie has its work cut out for it. I just can't believe.
Don't put it out of the running. I'm telling you.
I
can't
believe the Beverly Hills Cop 3 is going to be worse than what I just watched. But I hadn't yet watched it. The DVD, the Blu-ray that I had purchased had just arrived in the mail. And Jason said, I am anxious for you to break your Jaws 3D cherry. And I said, well, 40 years ago, they did stick it in already. Maybe just the tip.
Yep.
And he goes... And he goes, well, I'm anxious for the shark to impregnate you. To which I said, oh, you mean the end where it explodes, huh?
Yes.
Yes, we're all 13 years old.
That's
Thank
it.
You.
So you're thinking Beverly Hills Cop 3 can't possibly be worse, huh?
I am thinking that it cannot possibly be worse.
Well,
I quote Mullah Ram when I say, you don't believe us. You will.
Oh, man. Pulling out the Mullah Ram quote. That was nice.
Oh.
All right. Quickly. Jeff, rank the four Jaws movies that we have. Ready? Go.
Best to worst?
Yep.
Jaws. Jaws 2. Jaws of Revenge. Jaws 3D. Jaws 3D is the worst.
100% agree. 100% agree.
Okay. It's been a little bit since I've seen Jaws 2, so my number one is Jaws. There's no way anything's better than Jaws. My inclination is to put Jaws the Revenge in the number two spot.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've seen Jaws 2. Whatever, Jaws 4, Jaws 2, Jaws 2, Jaws 4, and then Jaws 3 is definitely the worst, although I clearly love it more than you guys do. I have nostalgic feelings of summertime at the matinee, that type of thing, but Jaws 4 is way better than Jaws 3.
Yeah. It is.
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll come back next week once D has lost his virginity to Beverly Hills Cop 3. We're going to hear whether or not you think that movie is worse or this movie is worse. We're going to ask what the heck happened with that. Jeff, you're going to come back with us?
I would love to.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk Axel Foley and John Landis and Judge Reinhold and John Saxon and have another movie set at an amusement park gone awry. All right. We'll see you here next week. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, guys. See you soon. Just the right amount of history, just the right amount of trash in it, just the right amount of, hey, we like this part of it.
Yeah.
And Leah Thompson's nipples are mentioned. So it's always, that's a win.